But really, I think Extemp goes a little bit beyond that. It's giving analysis on current events. It's not just speaking on it. It's not just giving the facts. It's about giving your own unique, independent analysis on a particular issue, which is why, to me at least, Extemp is such an exciting event. My old coach is fond of saying that it's your job to solve the world's problems in 7 minutes when you're doing Extemp. That's essentially your job. And I think that's exactly what you ought to be setting out to do, is to give the key analysis that helps people understand the world's problems and gives them the keys to better solve those problems in your 7-minute speech. So that's a lot to do in 7 minutes, but I think it is the purpose of Extemp. I think it's the goal that you need to set for yourself and hold yourself accountable to that standard. If that's what you're doing in Extemp, you're going to do well competitively, and you're also going to get a lot out of this great event. So what are some goals coming out of Extemp? What can you guys think of some benefits to doing Extemp for the student? Yeah.
A greater awareness of what's happening.
Greater awareness of what's happening. That's huge. Extempers really, really have a good grasp on the world, at least if you're doing your research well. Other benefits, guys. Yeah.
Ways of helping your speaking talents in learning what's happening in the world.
Okay, so developing, and I'm not going to write in cursive because that's just a bad idea. So developing your ability to speak on those issues, right? Because we need to know the terminology, and we need to be able to not just have the knowledge, but be able to speak on that. All right, what are some other benefits? Just throw them out here, guys.
Knowing how to analyze,
it builds your analytical skills.
You can shape how other people view issues.
Definitely.
Being able to organize.
Okay. So persuasiveness, it's very true. And then organization is also huge. What are some other benefits here, guys?
History, knowing how things in the past are escalating or maybe.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right on. In fact, I don't think any event will ever build your view of recent history like Extemp will. All right, so recent history. I think that covers a lot of them. Some other benefits that I have as I finish writing this. Again, my writing is... Gosh, I don't write well. But anyway, some other benefits that I see is being able to build a very specific presentation in a time crunch. You've got 30 minutes to write a 7-minute speech on a very, very specific topic. If you guys think that's not real-world applicable, it's very real-world applicable. I just took a test 3 weeks ago, the GRE, which is the entrance exam for graduate programs, and I took that test and had to write 2 essays in 1 hour and 15 minutes. One, they give you 30 minutes to write an essay, and the other one was 45 minutes. That's not easy to do in a time crunch like that. And if you've never experienced putting together material like that in that sort of a time crunch, it's even more difficult. And you don't have to wait to be applying to grad school for that to be relevant. The SAT and the ACT both contain very similar writing sections that you'll need to be prepared for. So this can be, you know, the difference between getting into college or not, to be perfectly honest. And that type of skill is very real-world applicable. It's going to help you a whole lot as you go through. Another thing, and this kind of relates to the analytical skills, but critical thinking skills are greatly improved from Extemp. Your knowledge of the world around you, and I would say really putting together kind of recent history and knowledge of the world around you, is you see the big picture better when you do Extemp. I think especially in our 24-hour news cycle culture that we're in, we tend to get very focused in on just specific events and just break it down one event at the time, and we miss the big picture of current events a lot of times. And I think Extemp helps you a lot with that, or at least if you do it correctly, it'll help you a lot with that. So those are the benefits to Extemp. That's why you guys should be really excited about this, because Extemp is the sort of event that's going to impact you for the rest of your life. It's going to make your life better for the rest of your life. Competing in this event, if you really put your mind to it, this event will help you throughout the rest of your life. That's a pretty exciting thought, an activity in high school that's going to help you for the rest of your life. And that's what we have with Extemp. Real quickly, I want to run over the rules of this event. And again, I apologize to our NFL friends because these are nowhere near the same. But you have 30 minutes to prepare a 7-minute speech on 3 questions that you're given when you walk into the room. These are all going to be questions on current events that have happened in the last 90 days. All right, so you'll get those three questions. You'll pick one, and you'll have 30 minutes to prepare your speech using boxes, file boxes with articles within them that you'll be able to research your topic out of. You also are provided with a 3x5 card, or actually you provide your own 3x5 card, but you're allowed one 3x5 card to take notes on. You can take that card into the room in order to be able to deliver your speech off of those notes. And then you also have to answer your question. That's a rule in extemp. You have to actually be speaking on topic. You can't get a question about Israel and talk about Target's last quarter's revenue. You can't do something like that. You have to focus on the topic that you've been given, essentially, is what that's going after. And one more thing that you need to do, it's not so much a rule as much as it is just something that you need to do, is cite your sources in an extemp speech. And I see this a lot with extempers, especially when they're just starting. They'll do their research and write down their points, but they'll never tell me where it comes from. Just a little hint, Newsweek is more credible than a high schooler. They just are. Okay, so if you're a high school student, I will take Newsweek's opinion over your opinion any day of the week, period. So as a judge, I'm looking for you to bring in outside sources that are more credible than you. So actually citing your sources strengthens your presentation rather than weakening it. So definitely make sure to cite your sources and tell me where you get that information from. We'll go over that more when we talk about how to write and deliver your speech, but just a quick note to all of the new extempers, make sure that you're citing all of the sources that you use. All right, so that's essentially our quick introduction to extemp. And where are we at on time? Do I have a clock in here? All right, so we're almost at 9:30. We're going to try to wrap this up by 10 o'clock and move in to our current events roundtable. That's my goal here. I make no promises on whether or not that will actually happen, but we're going to try it. So there's a few things that I want to go over now, more related to analysis and what extemp is really made up of. We wanted to be able to give a camp here that is related not only to the beginning extemper, but also to the more advanced extemper. We wanted our advanced students to be able to get something out of even these most basic lectures, and I think we've been able to put together some stuff that's going to help you with that. So I want to talk about a few things that extemp is not before we get into exactly what analysis is. The first thing is that extemp is not an opinion piece. What do I mean by that? Yeah.
You do not express your own opinion. You go by the opinions of the sources that you get.
Okay.
Information.
Okay. Yeah, that's one way of putting that. I wouldn't say you never express your own opinion. You do want to have your own independent analysis, but there's a piece of that you've got right. You're relying on outside sources. What else could I mean by it's not an opinion piece? Yeah.
You base your opinion off the sources?
You base your opinion off the sources. That's another one. What I really mean by this is who reads the editorial columns in newspapers? Anybody read editorials? David reads editorials. All right, cool. You guys ever read the editorial page of the New York Times? Anybody? Yeah, you read the editorial page in the New York Times? Okay. Sometimes those editorials are really, really good. I appreciate some of the stuff that comes out of the New York Times editorial page. Sometimes it's kind of crazy. And it's a very partisan opinion. It's not so much an independent analysis. And the same goes for editorials from other sources as well, especially like TV shows. Like if you guys ever watch Hannity, that's what I mean by this is not an opinion piece. Don't talk like Sean Hannity. It's a partisan opinion. It's an opinion where he's slanting the facts to fit a predetermined position, if that makes sense. That's what an opinion piece is. You're already lined up on the right or the left of the political aisle. You're either a Republican or a Democrat, and you're squeezing the facts into your point of view, if that makes sense. And that's what extemp is not. It is not an opinion piece. This is not a stump speech for your favorite political candidate. That's especially important coming into an election year. This is not to give a party line rhetoric. It's not to essentially give your political philosophy or give your point of view, not to give an opinion piece. Extemp is not about that. It's about giving analysis, which goes a lot deeper than party line rhetoric. It's not about the rhetoric. Really, the best way I can put this is check party rhetoric, cheap political shots, blind generalizations, and blind support for a political party at the door when you walk into the extemp prep room. That's the best way to go about this. And have a more open mind when you go into extemp. Extemp is about content, not rhetoric. This isn't a persuasive speech. It's more of a speech that's designed to give facts and analysis, if that makes sense. Does that make sense to everybody? What I mean by it's not an opinion piece. All right, cool. Any questions so far? And I just want to say, if you guys have any questions, just throw your hand up and we'll get to you as soon as possible. But moving on to the next thing that extemp is not, it's not a news report. not a news report. What do you think I mean by that? Yeah?
When you say it's not a news report, you mean that you're not just telling all the news that happened recently.
Okay, it's more focused than a news report. You're right there. I'm focusing on one specific issue for 7 minutes rather than, you know, the evening news where they hop around to different things. What else do I mean by it's not a news report?
Mm-hmm. You're analyzing the facts rather than just stating the facts?
Exactly. It goes a step further. A news report is to give you the facts, or at least a good news report, is to just give you the facts and let you make up your own mind. And extemp speech isn't like that. It's about giving you the facts and telling you what the facts mean in the bigger picture. That's what an extemp speech is all about. So it's not just giving the facts. That's a big deal here. Facts are great, but I need to know why they matter. Coming from a judge's perspective. Just remember that. That's a good way to think of how it's not like a news report. Analysis is the key. Facts plus analysis equal extemp. So whereas party line rhetoric to me has no place in extemp, a news report does have a place in extemp. It is important to introduce the facts, but you need to take it a step further and give me some analysis in order to really have a complete extemp speech. Your job is to explain, analyze, and predict. Not just give me the facts. Explain, analyze, and predict based upon those facts. So if extemp is not an opinion piece and it's not a news report, what is it? Can you guys think of something that besides extemp that it's similar to when you read other sources? What would extemp be similar to? I think it's more similar to, and it's not exactly the same, but something like a think tank article. All right, and this does exclude some think tanks that seem to think that that's the place for opinion pieces. But think tank article. How many of you have ever read something from the Brookings Institute? All right, all my policy debaters put their hands up. All right, cool. So the Brookings Institute. What was your impression reading the Brookings Institute? Did you feel like they were specifically aligned with one political party or another? Did you get that impression from reading the Brookings Institute? Trying to remember back to those articles of, you know, read at 2 a.m. and carted up. Okay. And sometimes they will give that impression that they are aligned with a political party. But you read a lot of articles from places like the Brookings Institute, the Hoover Institute, places like that, that they don't appear to be specifically aligned with a party rhetoric. They're not giving party line rhetoric, if that makes sense. And that's what extemp's about. It's about giving deeper analysis. Another cool thing about think tanks is that they look to the future. They try to take the facts and tell you what that means for the future. And that is really one of the crucial things about extemp, is they explain the facts and give additional analysis. It's that deeper level, essentially. Because those think tank guys that work at think tanks, are reading all the news reports that you're reading. Their job is to interpret those and put some more analysis into it and give you a deeper level of information than your evening news report gives you. And that's what you ought to be doing with extemp. And again, it's not exactly the same, but that's the closest thing I can really think of to what extemp ought to be. Is you ought to have more of a mindset of, I'm going to take the facts and give an unbiased, as much as I can possibly give an unbiased, interpretation and analysis of those facts. So that's kind of what I see extemp being more like. But now, how does that really happen? How do we create analysis, essentially? What do we think? How do we take those facts and fit them into the bigger picture? I think one of the best ways to show that is through an example. Who knows what's been going on in England? What's the biggest news story in England for the last 4 days? Yeah.
The Northern London riots.
Yeah, Northern London riots. What's going on with the Northern London riots? Tell me a little bit about it.
I don't know any background story, I don't think.
Okay, all right. But there's been huge riots in London, right? There's been over 100 people arrested, I think. It's a pretty big deal. They burned large portions of Northern London, some of the slums there. It's a pretty big deal. Yeah?
They actually, someone burned a Sony executive.
Right, and it's spreading out of the poor areas in Northern London and into some of the richer areas like that Sony executive building that got burned. It's a pretty big deal. What sparked it? Anybody know what sparked those London riots? One guy. Yeah.
Somebody got shot in the back of the taxi.
Yeah, guy got shot in the back of the taxi by a police officer. One guy died. And all of a sudden, we have literally tens of thousands of people rioting, streets are burning, northern London's essentially in flames right now. So, one guy dies. I mean, you know, you see in history, sometimes it only takes one guy dying to make something like that happen. But usually, there's some underlying things going on, right? Usually, there's something else. What's going on with northern London that would make people riot like that for one guy's death? I'm like 99% of those people probably don't even know this guy. They might not even know that somebody died when they're rioting, all right? So what sparked it? What's the underlying currents here? Yeah?
It would be, it's just like years and years, people are sick and tired of police abuse. It's been like one thing after another. You've got also the thing going on where the people are taking the children away.
Okay.
It's not just one thing. They're sick of the fact that they've been ripped off by, and their taxes are way too high. They can't get jobs. People's frustration, they're losing it completely because their lives, everything, it's impossible for them to live
right
as they should.
Okay.
So
relevant point.
Back at the taxi cab was really a catalyst.
Yeah, it's just a catalyst. It's the spark that starts the fire. But you're right, there's a lot more fuel there. It's general frustration. Now, England has had some issues with police brutality. You're right. But compared to, like, say, the United States, like LA probably has more issues with police brutality than the entire country of England. Just that one city alone. So, there is some issues with police brutality, but you're right, they can't get jobs. They're frustrated because of tax rates. But what is really sparking it? Why now instead of last year? Because taxes haven't really gone up significantly in London, as of late. The situation hasn't changed dramatically. Why specifically right now? Yeah.
They got a reason to do it.
They got a reason? That's one reason. Okay. Here's another one. Who knows what an austerity budget is? Yeah.
Do you want to tell them what it is, basically? Do I know what it is?
Yeah, what is it?
It's basically when the government imposes unrealistic things upon its citizens, such as, like, with the taxes, again, being too high,
okay,
the cost of fuel, everything is just
right. England has a very high VAT, value added tax, or basically a national sales tax.
And everybody sees that the richer people are getting richer and they're getting poorer.
And the poorer get poorer.
And it's that these people that are the decision makers, they're not listening. The politicians are not listening to the people, and yet they're making it harder on them and they're walking away from everything. They're not feeling the brunt of it. People are opening their eyes and see that they're really, you know, neo serfs.
Okay. What did you have?
Isn't it like what Bruce did, like, a couple of years ago? I think the debt got too high, and so they started, like, implementing all these measures to, like, cut the debt.
Right. Right. There's two ways to deal with a really high government deficit. One is gradual cuts. If you've looked at what's been happening in the U.S., that's a really ineffective way to do gradual cuts. Basically, we're making these really gradual cuts to the budget over 10-year periods. Okay, so we cut, 2.5 trillion last month over the next 10 years, but it's spread out over 10 years. The other way to deal with an astronomically high government deficit is what's called an austerity budget, where you make a lot of very immediate cuts and you raise taxes. So, essentially, rather than cutting over the next 10 years, Great Britain decided that they were going to cut a whole lot this year. And they just chopped, they took an axe, essentially, to the British budget for the coming fiscal year. What got hit with that austerity budget were social welfare programs. Social welfare programs, education programs, in fact, tuition is highly subsidized in Great Britain for almost all private universities as well as public universities, and the students are having to pay a lot more for tuition. They also increased the value-added tax, or essentially the national sales tax in Great Britain. Additionally, again, they hit social welfare programs and the national healthcare system in Great Britain, which is, of course, a socialized medicine system where the government controls the ebb and flow of healthcare supply to the people. So they pass an austerity budget. Well, where does an austerity budget hit? And you addressed this earlier. It hits the poor more than the rich, because the rich don't really rely on government services all that much. If you think about it, you're driving, you know, a really nice car. You're driving a Mercedes. You're living in a nice house. You don't really care if unemployment insurance gets hacked out of the budget. You don't care. Doesn't affect you. Not an impact. But if you're living in the slums of northern London, you care a whole lot if unemployment insurance suddenly disappears. And that's exactly what's happening here. This fiscal year, they cut out unemployment insurance, or at least severe cuts to unemployment insurance, welfare, etc. And the slums of northern London are fed up. They're frustrated. They can't get a job. The economy's still stuck in recession. They can't get a job. They can't get welfare even though they don't have a job. They can't make ends meet, so on and so forth. There's a lot of frustration with the government building because of this austerity budget. One guy gets shot and it all goes up in flames. All right? The situation makes no sense. If you're just reading the news report that says, I can't remember the guy's name, that the guy got shot, I think it was Thursday night. This situation makes no sense. Tens of thousands of people rioting in London, in a first world country, right? Makes no sense at all. But, if you understand that there's an austerity budget, that welfare programs have been cut, that unemployment insurance is disappearing, so on and so on and so on and so on, all of a sudden it starts to make a whole lot of sense that the slums of North London are going up in flames right now. All right? You see how that works? That's analysis, is being able to explain to your judge why this is happening and where it's headed in the future. Because if you just tell him that someone got shot, your judge is going to be like, that makes absolutely no sense at all. But if you're able to explain to them the intricacies of an austerity budget and that's impact on the poor people of London, all of a sudden things start to make a lot more sense. That's analysis in extent. All right, that right there. Now carrying it a step further, what does this mean for the future? And we're going to continue with our little London example since we already have it set up and explained. We have an austerity budget, we have riots, we have severe problems, all right, and extreme unpopularity obviously for the current sitting government and their economic policies at least. So where is this headed? 2 years from now, where's Great Britain headed? Do we think we'll have an austerity budget in Great Britain 2 years from now? What do you guys think?
Probably not if they're rioting.
If they're rioting? Okay, probably not. You think this is going to scare them? David Cameron's going to back down? Okay, cool. This is only, you know, a couple miles from David Cameron's home, so he's probably a little bit concerned. Yeah?
Well, there's a problem with also a lot of the workforce age people. I think it's the term emigrating, but they're leaving England.
Reverse brain drain.
Yeah, to other places.
Right. Yeah. Austerity budgets are happening all over Europe right now. You've got Greece, like you mentioned. There's several austerity budgets in place in Europe right now. But right, a reverse brain drain. And what we mean by that is what a brain drain is like in the United States, we have a lot of immigrants from Asian countries and European countries that are pretty advanced degrees, etc. And they come to the United States because they can make more money. What a reverse brain drain is where those people who came to the first world countries realize that all of a sudden they're actually better off back home and they leave again. So that is one thing that London and England is experiencing right now with their immigration policies because it's a very open system. We don't think that there's going to be an austerity budget then. Or do we have somebody who thinks they're going to keep the austerity budget in place? Okay.
Depends on how much they're writing.
Yeah. David?
Well, I don't know that they'll keep the austerity budget in place, but something that would happen is, as you said, there's reverse brain drain, which would really help. But another thing that happens when you make big cuts and the government is trying to, well, a couple of people trying to convince the government not to pass the $2.5 trillion plan because of this, is that when you make big cuts, especially when you make them all at once, you have a gross domestic product growth problem that
right.
Falls from it.
Mm-hmm.
So despite the fact that they might not keep the austerity budget, they might make themselves worse by having implemented it in the first place.
Right. Government cuts decrease what we call aggregate demand in the economy. Okay, and that causes some severe problems for economic growth. Yeah, Mickey, what's up?
Why is it only happening in London? It should be happening all over England, and maybe even actually more than likely in parts of Ireland, which are owned by...
Right. No, you're dead on, and it might be spreading. This just started Thursday. But the key is, and it's what you said earlier, they've got a reason now. They've got one thing that kind of sparked them in London. They don't have it anywhere else. Yeah?
Another thing that has this brain drain is happening is that immigration, particularly in northern England, I believe it's a poorer area. So you've got, you know, these immigrants now coming in, and they're all together, and they're Africans, they're Muslims. And it's completely permeating their culture now. So what used to be a Christian culture and generally an Anglo-Saxon culture, these other races are coming in, they're basically starting family units and increasing. And I see it because I live in South Florida.
Sure.
What ends up happening is the immigrants then start having, there's no neighborly brotherly love sort of thing going on. So there's animosity then between neighbors and neighbors. They're pitted against what should be your friend and your neighbor and your support. And it causes isolation in people.
Especially in times of economic hardship, right?
So which helps the government then, because then they're able to come in with their new world order agenda sort of things, you know, basically, they act like all of this is just happening.
Sure.
Basically
can try. Okay. Yeah. So there's some interesting dynamics here at play with London and with England. And that's what you can do with analysis is you can start to make, and we've got several predictions coming off of this. We've got the prediction of a reverse brain drain happening throughout England. We've got a prediction that, you know, maybe they're going to have some severe problems with GDP in the future due to these austerity budgets. We've got the potential for spreading of riots, right, even into Ireland. So there's a lot of things you can do with this information. Suddenly, an isolated riot, and obviously it's a big deal, but an isolated riot in northern London becomes a lot bigger, and you start to explain a lot of things off of it. It starts to branch out into a lot of different issues, and that's really one of the keys to giving good extent, is understanding those connections, all right, and understanding that they've got an austerity budget in London, and that's part of the frustration that's building, and what are they going to do in the political climate there? It's pretty interesting, and it causes some interesting dynamics to come into play as you look at that sort of a situation. Analysis at its core is providing the facts, then going to the next level and explaining why it matters and how it ought to be interpreted. And that's kind of what we just did there. We've got the facts, there's riots in northern London. We're explaining why it matters. It's because it's indicative of the public opinion of a broader government policy. And then additionally, we kind of showed where that could possibly be headed and how it ought to be interpreted. How do you start putting analysis together, though? That's an interesting thing, because I did that. I knew about the riots in London. I knew about the austerity budget. I knew those facts, and I kind of pieced them together. How do you go about doing that? Really, one of the best ways is to just ask the question, why? You know, why is this happening? Why is that an issue? That's our best way to do it with the London thing, because we've got a situation that doesn't make a whole lot of sense on its face. So we ask the question, why? Why are they rioting? Well, guy got shot. Well, that doesn't really suffice for massive riots. Why? And you keep asking that question, why, until you get to a root cause. So one way is to ask why. Another way is to know your recent history. That's a really big deal here, is to research and know recent history. Recent history is your big, big friend. And I'm talking recent history within the last, let's say, 50 years. You can go back a little bit further than that. Let's say 70 years. 70 years of history is pretty big. The last 70 years have a huge impact on a lot of issues globally, domestically, all over the place. That recent history is your friend. Another key to putting together analysis is to base your opinion on facts, not on other opinions. And that's key to be able to differentiate between what is fact and what is opinion as you're reading through a newspaper article. We'll go over that later when we're talking about how to research. But that is crucial to being able to put together your analysis. Additionally, think about the potential impacts of those facts. That's the next step to kind of putting together analysis, is think about what does that fact mean? How does it impact what's going on in that particular situation? Like we talked about the riots in London, what's the potential impact of that? Well, the potential impact is that we have snap parliamentary elections next year. And what that causes is potentially a change in the political power structure of Great Britain back to the Labour Party, which just finally got thrown out of power after a long stint of being in power in Great Britain. So you've got the potential impacts as you start looking at that. That's another way to start to put together your analysis. And then make predictions about potential responses and the impacts of those responses. What I mean by that is Great Britain's government essentially has two possible responses here, all right? Really three. Let's say three responses. What are those three responses that Great Britain's government can take to these riots? Give me one response. Yeah, Brian.
They can axe their austerity budget.
Okay, we can go back to the 08 budget. 08 budget. That probably makes a lot of people happy. Okay, but they've got astronomical deficits again. Okay, what's another one? Rebecca.
They could keep their austerity budget and simply respond to the riots with force.
Okay, all right, they call out the National Guard. You know, call out the troops. Let's put these down. So just stick with the 11 budget. Call out the troops. All right? We're just going to put these riots down. And so far, that's been the response. There's been no negotiation. Nothing. The British government is just saying, you know what? We're going to bet this is an isolated instance. And if we respond with enough force, they're not going to want to do this again. What's our third option, Mickey?
What we're
first off, responding with enough force will cause bad thoughts for the press.
Okay, bad press. All right. And there's advantages and disadvantages to all of these, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you think of a third response? What could they do?
Well, they don't have a democracy.
Yeah, they do.
And they have a...
It's a constitutional monarchy, but it's effectively a democracy. All right, so when you think of Great Britain, think of it as a democracy. But yeah. Okay. Yeah, what's the third option?
They could take away the current cuts and put them somewhere else.
Okay, realign the budget. Here's a big one, and this is probably, we could potentially see this in Great Britain. In fact, if I had to pick an outcome, it's probably this one. And it's probably going to be combined with heavy force to put down the riots. Realign the budget. Essentially take cuts in social welfare programs and put them somewhere else. All right, or even reduce some of the cuts, make some of the cuts less drastic, kind of pick a middle road here. They don't go back to the 08 budget, which was top heavy essentially, and is unsustainable according to most economists. They don't stick with the austerity package because at their base, politicians all want to keep their job. That's one of their primary motivators, right? Keeping our job. And austerity budget does not keep David Cameron's job. David Cameron, by the way, is the Prime Minister of Great Britain. And then finally, the third one here, the third option, is probably the one that they'll take. They realign the budget. We make the cuts hit voters less, and we make it hit other people more. You know, move it around, hit business more, maybe hit something else. You know, try and move these cuts around and renegotiate them so that we get to keep our job. You know, that's kind of what I think Parliament is going to look at here. So again, we can make future predictions about the reactions that Great Britain's government can have, right? And we did that all just based upon what we knew from the situation. Because we knew about the austerity budget, because we knew about the riots, all of a sudden we're able to predict possibly the fiscal future of Great Britain for the next 3 to 5 years. Pretty cool, right? Yeah.
As an expense speaker, this is where, as a judge too, I always kind of find myself, gosh, this kid's making a good case, but I completely disagree with what he's saying.
Right.
This is where you can get into trouble if you're a little bit too extreme on one end or another.
Sure.
Should you give your analysis be to think that your judges might have a very, you know, very different idea? You need to keep that.
Right.
If you want to.
Right, and the key is to not speak in absolutes because it's not an absolute. I don't know absolutely that Great Britain's going to realign the budget next year. I don't know that. I can predict that. I can say I think that's where it's headed, but I can't say that I know they're going to realign the budget. David Cameron might very well decide to hunker down and wait this out and just push on through. So I think that you want to be sensitive to other people's viewpoints, not to the extent that you water down your own opinion, but to the extent that you just admit that, you know, I don't have all the answers here, and there are other people who disagree, and that's a perfectly reasonable position. This is just where I see it going, if that makes sense. Ben?
Would you consider using, like, multiple answers, like saying, okay, it could go this way, could go this way, here's how I think it's going to go?
Yeah. I would. And we're going to talk about some of that in how to structure your speech. There's some good ways to deal with some of these more controversial topics and structure your speech so you give credence to both sides and you're able to present your own opinion as well within that. And Ben's hitting it right on there, that you want to be able to present both sides there.
You could give both sides, but don't you have to pick one?
You have to answer the question. So yeah, you're going to need to say yes, and here's my reasons. And that's the best way to go about it. Even if your judge disagrees, I find that if you're giving reasonable analysis based on facts, even if the judge disagrees with you at the end of the day, they're going to be able to say, yeah, I disagree, but that's a pretty reasonable point. You know, and that's kind of what I always shot for as an extemper, is even if the judge disagrees with me, they should still understand where I'm coming from and be able to, at least at an intellectual level, respect that argument. Yeah.
You said go back 70 years, so mm-hmm. What does that have to do with the current situation?
Okay, well, if you're going back 70 years in Great Britain, 70 years ago in Great Britain, you start to see the rise of the Labour Party, really even a little bit more recent than that. I'm talking about, this 70-year number is general for almost all of extent. It does apply to this particular situation, though. Within the last 70 years, we've seen a power shift in Great Britain towards the Labour Party, whereas before it didn't go that way previously. So especially in the last 20 years, specifically the last 10 to 15, even more so, Labour Party has been the dominant party in Great Britain. The Labour Party in Great Britain instituted a lot of these social welfare programs, as well as like tuition subsidies, things like that. Labour's responsible for a lot of those reforms. And David Cameron, the current Prime Minister, is not a Labour Party member. He's actually, and I forget the name of his party, he's in the opposition party, or what used to be the opposition party. Now they're the majority there in Great Britain. The Tories, right? Yeah. Gosh, I kept wanting to say Whig, and I'm like, no, that's not right. The Tories. that's a long time ago. But the Tories in Great Britain, right? So David Cameron is now in that particular position, but this is their first term in full power. And so we could see a swing back to the Labour Party, and understanding the previous power structure and how we got to this point helps you understand the potential power swing that we could see there. But that 70-year number is more general. You go back 70 years, that is 1940, right? So it's World War II, and it's basically World War II and post-World War II history are the most relevant to current events. I mean, previous stuff is also relevant, but that's the most relevant. Any other questions, guys? Great. I got a couple more things I want to hit. I do want to go over the advantages of doing analysis like this in extent. And they range all over the place. There are competitive advantages to giving analysis like this in extent, not giving party speeches and not giving news reports. There are competitive advantages. One, the judge knows where you stand. All right. And they may disagree with you. In fact, a lot of times they probably will. And I've had judges who have told me on ballots that they totally disagree with me. And then given me first place anyway. It happens. It really does. They can totally disagree with you and still rank you highly. And the key is, again, to make a well-reasoned point. It's to have the best facts and the best analysis. And even if the judge arrives at a totally different conclusion than you, you've still given them a well-reasoned way to go about it. And the way you do that is by showing them your thought process. And that's kind of what we did with this Great Britain scenario, right? I don't just jump out and say, because of the riots, Great Britain will reduce their austerity budget and realign their budget in the coming fiscal year. Okay, because the judge might totally disagree with me, think I'm wrong, think that that's the worst thing Great Britain could possibly do, and I haven't given any reasoning behind it. What I say is, these riots in London have been sparked by frustration built up over years and years, and finally kind of set off by this austerity budget. Because of that, Great Britain faces a crisis on their fiscal policy, and David Cameron has to make a choice. And I can lay out a couple choices that Cameron has in front of him. And then finally I can conclude with, I think the most likely path for Great Britain is that they're going to realign and modify this austerity budget to hit the poor less, because they're seeing the impacts are simply too much to bear, politically speaking, for Cameron's Tory party. And so once I show you kind of that thought process there, and I show you that the reason they're going to do this is because Cameron A, wants to stay in power, B, doesn't want to be dealing with riots, and C, recognizes and understands that the previous deficits are unsustainable. When I show you that that's why I think that's the path he's going to take, you may think that Great Britain should stay with their austerity package. In fact, I know a lot of people who would say Great Britain should stay with their austerity package. I know some people who would say Great Britain should go back to the 08 budget. But I think a lot of people will be able to at least recognize that that is a legitimate point, that there's a good chance that they pick a middle ground there just because of the reasons that I just laid out. And when you show the judge your thought process, they're a lot more likely to be accepting of your ideas. So they know where you stand. Yeah.
This makes really good sense to me, and I like how you walked us through there. Can you just kind of take a step backwards, and how might this question be worded? When you
sure.
This up, what might it have said?
Okay, so a question that would lead me on this line of analysis. How will Great Britain respond to the London riots? Or how should Great Britain respond to the London riots? Which are slightly different questions, because one's asking you to predict what Cameron will do, and the other is asking you what Cameron should do, which is a little bit different. There's a different dynamic there, but a question like that. I could potentially see it actually reverse engineering this and going from a question about Great Britain's budget back to the riots and explaining that impact. So saying, like, a question that says, is Great Britain's austerity package working? And then you can reverse back to talking about the riots and showing how it's not working. It's causing great unrest at the bottom social classes, things like that.
Okay. So from what I'm understanding from that question, is that question almost demands a position in the answer?
All extemp questions demand a position in the answer. They should. A smart extemper will always give a position in their answer. Just because the judge needs to know where you stand. And you need to show him your thought process, which is our second point here. Your second competitive advantage is show the thought process. But you need to take a position. And we'll talk about this, like how you pick that position, when we talk about how to structure your speech. But yeah, you should take a position there. But yeah, those are the types of questions I could see leading to this type of a scenario here. And all that leads to, last of all, just better competitive success. Okay. You can win doing other formulas. I'm not going to say that this is the only way to win an extemp, because it's not. But what I will say is, when you give this type of in-depth analysis, judges appreciate it. They just do. You sound really, really intelligent when you take a question that seems totally unrelated and relate it back to something that at first the judge that wouldn't come to a judge's mind. Like, if I'm asked a question about Great Britain's budget, the riots probably don't come to mind. And if I'm asked a question about the riots, the budget probably doesn't come to mind. But when I link those two together and I make it clear to the judge what that link is, all of a sudden I gain a ton of credibility in that judge's mind. So that's the sort of thing that gives you better success competitively, I think. And I think this works with any extemper's style, to be perfectly honest. I know there's some extempers that like to keep things really simple, tell stories, use analogies to explain things, and that's great. You can still give this deep analysis along with that. And it's going to up your game. It's going to increase your credibility with your judge. For somebody like me, who struggles with that whole creative side of things and likes to focus on analysis, the deeper the analysis, the better. Because it's going to convince your judge that you really know what you're talking about, that you are the most prepared speaker in the room, and you deserve to win that room. So the deeper the analysis, the better as far as competitive success. Obviously, you want the judge to be able to understand you and follow you. But if you're able to lay it out pretty simply there, then the more you can link together, the better analysis, the more background you can give to the judge, the better. Some other advantages that come outside of this, and actually one more competitive advantage, and we've kind of discussed this, is that you don't alienate the judge as much when you're giving a deeper analysis like that that's not necessarily tied to one political party or the other, and you're just kind of explaining your reasons why. Almost detached. You're not saying that this is what I think ought to happen. I'm not saying this is best, but this is just kind of what is going to happen based upon the facts. They may disagree with you, but they're not going to hate you for that. And that's kind of the difference there. Another good thing here is that it broadens your perspective. Broadens your perspective, just generally. Giving analysis like this broadens your perspective. As you look at the news, as you look at just life in general. Because it lets you think in a way of why are people doing things. Okay? Not just so-and-so is doing this, why are they doing that? What's the motivation? You look at the next level and the deeper understanding of the motivations behind people, and you start to gain a broader perspective on life, a broader perspective on current events, certainly. It definitely improves your critical thinking, and it makes you a far more persuasive person. All right, when you're able to give this sort of analysis and explain not only this is what's going to happen, but here's why, this is what should happen, but here's why, and you can give a deeper analysis, it makes you a far more persuasive person. Which obviously, again, the goal of extemp is not to have the judge come out of the room agreeing with you and thinking that you're exactly right and wanting to vote you in for president or anything like that. But it just makes you a more persuasive person in general, and that never hurt anybody. So the more persuasive you can be, the better, and this does it. And then, last of all, I just want to discuss here, I really want you guys to be excited about extemp. And I know some of you aren't, and that's okay. Hopefully we'll fix that by the end of the day. But my goal is, by the end of today, you guys should be excited about extemp. I really hope you are. Because extemp tends to have a bad rep for being a little bit boring. All right, and it can be boring, but it can also be incredibly, incredibly interesting if it's done well. It can be fascinating. It can challenge your mind. It can bring a whole new dynamic to life that you're not going to experience otherwise. And extemp is really, to me, the most challenging yet rewarding and fun event that you'll ever find in speech and debate. It's going to challenge you. It's going to have its speed bumps. It's going to make things a little bit difficult on you at times, but it really is the most rewarding event. When you really come out of an extemp speech that you just totally nailed, I don't think there's a better feeling in competitive speech and debate, honestly, than knowing that you just, in 7 minutes, were able to give a satisfactory explanation of current accounts deficits and currency manipulation from China and all these different things. If you're able to really give a great extemp speech and you nail it, it's an awesome feeling. And it's definitely one of the most rewarding events down the road as far as future impact on your life. So I hope you guys are excited about extemp. I definitely am. And I'm looking forward to being able to talk really for the rest of the day with you guys about the great event of extemp.